A Pair of Blue Eyes by Thomas Hardy. Dramatized for radio in 3 episodes by Jane Beeston. With Jeremy Irons as Henry Knight, Janet Moore as Elfriede, Michael Maloney as Stephen, Nigel Stock as Parson Swancourt, and Vivian Pickles as Mrs. Swancourt. Episode 2.
So tired. My eyes will hardly stay open. But how relieved I am to be back at my own dear Endelstone with its rocks and heather and trees. The gorse round me smells so sweet. I can taste the salt in the wind. There's Pansy safely back in her field. Oh, my head aches. Now, I must face Papa. A note. On second thoughts, I will not return today, but shall come home tomorrow afternoon with a friend. In haste, your loving father.
Oh, Miss Alfred.
Oh, Unity.
I said to myself, 'twas her spirit. We didn't dream of you not coming home last night. You didn't say you were staying.
I intended coming back, Unity, but altered my plan. I wished I hadn't afterwards. Papa will be angry, I suppose.
Better not tell him this.
True, I'd rather not. Well, perhaps you could begin telling him when he comes
what?
Back.
And get you into trouble.
Oh, I deserve it.
No, indeed, I won't. That's not such a mighty matter.
Well, if you think it of no consequence, perhaps there's no need to worry Papa. I'll see how I feel about it tomorrow.
So, you're out here, Elfriede.
Oh, hello, Papa.
I've been looking all over the house for you. You look a little tired. I hope you had as successful a time as I've had.
I don't know that mine was very successful, Papa. But I'm back safe and sound.
Good, good. Now, let me tell you my news. Or would you prefer to guess?
No, really, I couldn't, Papa.
Oh, try, won't you?
I'd rather not.
Oh, do try. You don't look quite yourself, Elfie. But when I tell you what I went away for, you'll feel better at once.
What?
To get married.
Yes.
To Mrs. Troyton, the new owner of the manor next door to us.
Yes, I met her when she came to call.
Oh, yes? Well, she's lately come into a large legacy and a house in town. Oh, any amount of good fortune has come her way. You'll benefit as well as me by my union with her, Elfie. She may even help you over your difficulty in getting your novel published. She knows all the right people and moves in high society.
I'll let Papa talk on.
Let me give you an example.
I feel so confused.
The other day...
But mainly, I feel relief. Relief that if Papa did not confide in me, then he cannot have expected my confidence. I want to laugh, to be happy with him. Oh, how good it is no longer to feel guilty. We shall move to the manor, he says, and perhaps I shall earn enough with my novel for Stephen and I to marry.
My darling Elfriede, I should address you as my wife-to-be. This is a brief note written in haste to tell you I've been offered a very good job in Bombay as an assistant architect. The salary is good, and I've been to my doctor who says I should acclimatize without much illness. I think, Elfie, I should take it, and it will give me the possibility to save some money and thereby hasten the prospects of our marriage.
Oh... This heat is certainly quite extraordinary for the time of year. I shall be quite pleased to get back to a Cornish breeze. Don't you agree with me, Lord Luxillian?
We drove past a furrier's window this afternoon, and the sight filled us with such a sense of suffocation, Swancourt, you've no idea. Miss Swancourt, I have hardly seen or spoken to you since the publication of your novel. I never dreamt Endelstowe was nursing such young talent.
My stepdaughter is indeed a clever young lady.
Oh, I assure you, Lord Luxillian, it's no great feat. A beginner's attempt, no more.
Well, I don't know about that. But it seems to me that you were very unfairly treated by the present. Writing a heavy review like that on a sensitive little piece such as your novel seems absurd.
Do you mean I was reviewed in the present?
Oh, yes. Must have been 4 or 5 months back.
But they promised to send me any notice that appeared.
Well, I'm afraid I have clumsily given you information of a review that, well, no doubt they withheld out of consideration for you.
Oh, not at all. I'm pleased you told me about it. Was it so very much against me?
No. A little carping, I should say. Ungenerous, even. But I cannot remember exactly.
We'll drive to the President's office and get a copy at once, shall we, Papa?
Certainly we will, my dear, if you're anxious. But tomorrow will do as well as today. Or better still, we could ask them to post a copy on to Cornwall.
Yes, why not? Would you oblige me in a matter now, Miss Swancourt? I have been sent as a special messenger by my little Polly and Kate to ask you to come and visit them in our carriage.
Of course, I'd be delighted.
Aunt Charlotte, I've received the reviews and just listen to what this man says. He's really cruel. He makes me feel quite ashamed for having dared to write a book at all.
Oh, you'll have to learn to take no notice of critics, Elfried. Read me what he says.
Oh, no, I can't bear to. You shall read for yourself.
We are far from altogether disparaging the author's powers. Well, I don't see the review is such a terrible one. This is a little unkind, I must admit. Instead of escaping from the monotony of social scenery as we had hoped, we find ourselves in the hands of some young lady hardly arrived at the years of discretion, if we are to judge by the silly device to disguise her sex adopted on the title page. Oh, dear.
I'm not silly. He might have called me anything but that.
I should think no more about it, my dear. No. On second thoughts, I think I should write and tell him what you think.
I might. And send it anonymously.
Oh, I don't think that would be any use.
Then I'll put my initials only. The less you are known, the more you are thought of.
Write it, Elfried, and we'll post it directly. Certainly it'll make you feel better.
Dear Miss Swancourt, though I'm sorry that my remarks should have seemed harsh to you, it is a pleasure to find that they have brought forth such an ingeniously argued reply. Unfortunately, it is so long since I wrote my review that my memory does not serve me sufficiently to say a single word in my defense, even supposing there remains one to be said, which is doubtful. Possibly, I may have the pleasure of seeing you soon, when any argument you choose to advance will have all the attention it deserves.
That is just veiled sarcasm. I know it is.
Oh, don't judge him too severely.
And I never said his remarks seemed harsh.
He thinks you're in quite a temper with him, my dear.
I have a letter from Henry Knight. Do you remember that I mentioned I'd met him in London? Well, now he writes to say he hopes to take up my invitation to stay with us and will come next week. Listen to this. Do you know it was actually Harry who reviewed Elfried's book? He had no idea until he received her letter.
Really?
Oh, it's ridiculous. The coincidence is too great.
Henry Knight.
So now, Elfried, you will be able to meet your tormentor face to face and argue with him to your heart's content.
Henry Knight, is that his name?
Yes. Oh, why do you ask?
No particular reason. It seemed to me I'd heard the name before somewhere. Hadn't you, Elfried?
But he's quite a distinguished man of letters, so it's not improbable.
When did you say he was coming?
He says on the 3rd. Well, that must be next Tuesday. That one there is of a flesh-coloured variety. But only Anders, though they are such bulky shrubs, are so easily wounded as to be unprunable. Did you know that, Harry? Uh-huh. Giants with the sensitiveness of young women. Ah, but here she is. Elfried, let me introduce you to Henry Knight. Harry, this is my stepdaughter, Elfried Swancourt.
Miss Swancourt.
How do you do? I'm sure you'll have plenty to talk about. Well, now I must go and tell your father Harry has arrived.
So, Miss Swancourt, we meet at last.
Aunt Charlotte told me about you.
And now reviewer and reviewed are face to face.
I was merely anxious to let you know my real meaning in writing the book.
I can quite understand the wish, and was gratified that my remarks should have reached home. They very seldom do.
You quite upset me by some of the things you said.
I suppose that's inevitable with any honest critic. But tell me, Miss Swancourt, are you going to write another romance?
Write another? So you can write a further condemnation?
You may do better next time. I think you will. Nevertheless, I'd advise you to stick to domestic scenes.
Thank you. But never again.
Well, you could be right. That a young woman has taken to writing is not by any means the best thing to hear about her.
What then, Mr. Knight, is the best?
I suppose to hear that she has married.
And what after she has been married?
To hear no more about her. After that, the greatest real praise is that nothing happens to keep the talk of her alive.
Yes, I see. But of course it's quite different for men. Why don't you write novels, Mr. Knight?
I don't particularly want to. And if I did, I shouldn't have the concentration. When energy has been leaked away week by week, as mine has for the last 9 or 10 years, not enough force remains for a complete book. Also, of course, you need the self-confidence and the patience. When you've been used to quick results, it makes faith in the future all the more difficult.
Yes, I understand. So you choose to write in fragments?
Yes, I suppose that's true. It came about quite accidentally as the result of the need to earn a living. Oh, but I can see you are not listening, Miss Swancourt. Your mind is elsewhere. Your eyes look at me and past me into your future. And past your future into eternity, no doubt. At this moment you are gazing in an unconscious way as though you were still thinking of something we spoke of earlier. Or was it something in me you were so intent upon?
As far as I was thinking of you at all, I was thinking how clever you are. Shall we go out, Mr. Knight?
Her honesty and simplicity were startling. She walked out ahead of me onto the lawn, stood on the edge of the terrace. I could not help but watch her. The sun's light flooded her face and heightened her color. The ends of her fair hair softly dragged themselves backwards and forwards over her shoulders as each faint breeze thrust against or relinquished them. Fringes and ribbons of her dress, moved by the same breeze, licked like tongues and fluttering forward, caught their share of a lustrous orange glow. In spite of myself, I felt a strong desire to spend time in Elfried Swampert's company.
What a view! It's quite amazing.
Yes, and the sea's so very still today. Quite grey and calm.
You arrived just in time, Mr. Knight. This week, our poor old tower is to be taken down, stone by stone, pending replacement.
Oh, don't go near to the edge, Elfried, I implore you. The height makes me feel quite dizzy.
It's the tallest tower along this stretch of coast. You can feel it sway in a gale. Elfried's been up here with me in the wind before now, but I must admit, sometimes it frightens me.
I really think we should start down.
Yes, Mrs. Swancourt and I will set off slowly. Don't you two follow us until we're nearly at the bottom, or you'll run into us and break our necks. It's dark as pitch inside the turret.
When I was a child, I would walk all round this parapet balancing.
Indeed.
You don't seem very interested by what I say, Mr. Knight.
It seems to be foolhardy. It cannot be more than 2 foot wide and has no battlements to protect anyone from falling. On such an old tower, it may not even be safe.
Oh, you're very cautious. It's quite safe if you watch your step. I'll show you.
I certainly gave you credit for more common sense. Watch how you go, for God's sake. Miss Swancourt, you're endangering your life. I insist on your coming down. Your feet!
Oh, my foot slipped on some moss. I thought...
Oh, my God. Whatever, I should have met a woman fool enough to do such a thing. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. It was sheer chance you didn't fall outwards and crash 30 feet to the ground beneath. Well, I've got you. I'll lean against it. The fit will pass.
Oh, that's better. Please let me go. I shall be all right.
If you can stand, then I will. I hardly know whether to laugh at you or to be angry.
Oh, I'm sorry, but my knees seem weak.
You're not hurt.
No, I'm only frightened.
But you can't walk.
I'm only shaken.
If you feel faint, then you should allow me to carry you down.
No, no, I can manage. No, it didn't.
Now, but will you clasp your hands around my neck so I can carry you down without hurting you?
I'd much rather you let me walk, Mr. Knight.
Keep still, or I shall fall.
and kill the two of us.
Promise me never to walk on that parapet again.
It will be pulled down, so I shan't be able to. I had the feeling that that moment had happened already, or that something similar would happen to us both again.
God forbid.
Elfried's fall on the tower was necessarily explained to some extent, but both of us forbore to say what she had been doing to cause it. For the remainder of the afternoon, she was absent, lying down in her bedroom, I assumed. But she appeared at dinner as bright and vivacious as ever. Afterwards, in the drawing room, I noticed she was studying a chess problem, which led me to suggest a game. 2 hours later, we were still playing. On several occasions, I had allowed her to replace a man on her religiously assuring me that such a move on her part had been an absolute blunder. I cannot say she had allowed me the same license. Finally, she grew flurried.
There. Oh, stupid. I didn't see your rook. Of course, nobody but a fool would have put a queen there knowingly.
Nobody, of course.
I think it unkind of you to take advantage of a pure mistake.
I lost my bishop by an even more silly mistake.
Yes, but...
Yes?
Well, just as if it really mattered whether I raised my fingers from a man or not. I wouldn't have thought an experienced player like you would have fussed over petty rules like that.
Checkmate.
Yes. Another game, Mr. Knight?
I'll give you the odds of a bishop this time. That should even things out.
I'd rather not. I can see no fun in a game where one player gives the other an advantage.
Henry, what have you been doing to Elfried these last 2 days? She's not at all herself. Far too much time spent on chess has upset her tender brain. She won't take a cudgeling like your great head. You should have refused to go on with it instead of wearing the poor child out.
Oh, I'm extremely sorry. She seems so keen, indeed determined, to continue.
Well, the trouble with Elfried is she takes no thought for what's good for her. I'll leave you to repair the damage you have done, Harry.
Yes.
Come and entertain Harry, my dear. There are one or two things I have to do.
Cousin Charlotte tells me she thinks I overtaxed you with our games of chess. I beg you to accept my apologies, Miss Funcourt. I have been lost without your company.
I'm sorry you've been blamed, Mr. Knight, for what was not your fault at all. I was simply a little overtired. Oh, I see you are making notes.
Yeah. I was jotting down one or two ideas. With your permission, I'll complete this last.
May I see it? I wrote my poor romance in that way, in bits and pieces and ever so many notes. I should like to see if your way of entering things is the same as mine.
Very well, if you really must.
Yes, I really would like to.
Here. Oh, I think I've got to do it now. That was the song you played me last night. Oh, now, don't waste any more time on my notebook, I implore you, Miss Swancourt. They're only random jottings.
Take it. You can have your notebook back with pleasure. I never supposed you would have put me in it.
Your name is not mentioned once.
Not my name.
Nor your description, not anything by which anyone could recognize you.
What is this, then? August 7th. Girl reaches her teens and her self-consciousness is born. Generally begins career by actions which are popularly termed showing off. A country miss adopts the method of taking a dangerous fence, whistling or making your blood run cold by appearing to risk her neck. Mem on Endelstow Tower. An innocent vanity is, of course, the origin of these displays.
Oh, you must not make too much of such observations, I dare say, that you yourself have thought some disagreeable things about me. Well, tell me, Miss Swancourt. Retaliate, please.
I thought...
Go on.
...that you were rather round-shouldered.
Indeed.
and that there was a little bald spot on the top of your head.
Two ineradicable defects, much worse than being thought self-conscious, I suppose.
You alluded to me as if I were such a child, but I'm really quite a woman, you know. Tell me, Mr. Knight, what coloured hair do you like best for a woman?
More depends on the abundance than the colour.
But if they are equal?
Dark.
I mean for women.
So do I.
And eyes? I've always rather wished my own were brown instead of blue.
Honestly or as a compliment?
Honestly, of course. I don't want anyone's compliment.
I prefer hazel. Now, if you'll excuse me, Miss Throdcourt, your father has asked me to read the lesson tonight, so I must prepare for it. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. And it was so when Elijah heard it. So he wrapped his face in his mantle.
Went out and stood in the entry of the cave. And Harry speaks. His voice makes tears come into my eyes. I turn and try to see him better in the pulpit above us. It is the stairway. I'm sure of it. Up in the gallery window. She's turning her head, looking down. Down on her son's tomb. The sun on her face, lighting it up. Her expression is so, so frightening. Bitter. Tragic. I lower my eyes, shrink back, hide in the shadow of the organ. I feel her curses raining down on me. I'm so afraid she will tell Harry wicked things about me and he'll stop respecting me. Oh, in the name of God, send her away. Send her away.
I liked your reading, Mr. Knight. You read better than Papa did this morning.
I expect that's because I'm fresh to it. I thought you played excellently and very correctly.
Correctly, yes.
It must give you pleasure to be able to take an active part in the service.
I'd like to be able to play with more feeling.
Ah, it's extraordinary how few women genuinely love music. Even leaving out those who have nothing in them.
How do you judge the difference between women with something and women with nothing in them?
Well, let me give you an example. I knew a man who was about to marry. He offered his betrothed a choice of collections by two British poets that she pretended to want badly. But when he asked her which he should send, she replied, "I'd rather a pair of really pretty earrings." Now, I'd call her a girl with not much in her but vanity, wouldn't you?
Yes, I suppose.
Don't tell me, Miss Swancourt, that you would have preferred the knick-knacks.
No, I don't think so.
If I asked you if you prefer some really good music or a pair of pretty earrings, which would you choose?
The music. If I could buy the earrings afterwards.
Ah, so you admit it.
Oh, forgive me, I like the music best, only I'd like...
The earrings better. Well, why didn't you say so at once instead of pretending a seriousness not in your nature?
You see, I lost one of my prettiest earrings last year, and Papa said he would not allow me to buy any more because I was careless. That's why I want some so very much, Mr. Knight.
Oh, I'm afraid I've been rather cruel.
Oh, no, you haven't. I must seem dreadfully vain to you, I know. But it's only in my ways, not in my heart. The worst women are those vain in their hearts.
An adroit distinction.
Look at that especially bright star, Mr. Knight. It seems to be exactly above me. And that one there could be above, anywhere.
Above the source of the Nile. And that low down one might be over a young friend of mine in India, who's very possibly looking at the first star you pointed out and imagining it to be over his true love he left behind.
You joke. That star over my head. I don't understand your meaning, Mr. Knight.
Or anybody else's in England, for that matter.
Oh, yes, I see.
My young friend's parents, I believe, live somewhere around these parts. Fortunately, or unfortunately for him, he fell in love. But then he went abroad. Since then, I've heard very little of him. Is there anything troubling you, Miss Swancourt?
No. Why do you ask?
Oh, I had the feeling there was something disturbing you.
Oh, you're imagining it. Perhaps I was looking a little serious because of a thought I just had.
Oh, and may I ask what it was?
It was... The difference between men and women generally, perhaps, is that we build our happiness on any chance basis. But you are for making a world to suit your happiness.
I shall have to think about that before I can say whether or not I agree with you, Elfriede.
I only told you because you asked me.
Two days later, I left Endelstow for Cork. It was while I was there that I began to miss Elfriede. Oddly, the amount I missed her was out of all proportion to my feelings for her when we had been together. For the first time, it entered my head that I might be in love. I could hardly believe this true, as I had not found Elfriede in any way exceptional. Agreeable and delightful, perhaps, but something of a child. Now, everything changed. I could not get her out of my mind. This new force in my life was already beginning to assume an imperious rule over me. It made me bitterly regret my unkindness to her over her desire for earrings. I decided that whatever else happened, I must take her a pair back with me.
My dearest Elfie, I miss you very much indeed, but the pain of separation is lessened by the knowledge that each day one stone more is removed from the barrier that divides us. Oh, Elfie, how well we shall look together once we are married. People will turn their heads and say, what a prize he has won. Don't be sad about our wild attempt to run away together. For whatever anyone else may think, I know well enough the absolute purity of our intention. For one thing only, I reproach you a little. That you have not written to me very often during your visit to London. Indeed, you seemed so delighted with all you saw and did that I no longer felt myself an essential part of your happiness. Please write directly to put my mind at rest, my own wife-to-be. Your ever-loving Stephen.
Stephen still expects us to marry. Feels it the only right thing to do after what happened. He's right. I know he is. Yet after meeting Mr. Knight, it is difficult to think of myself married to Stephen. Perhaps because he is younger than me, very little. But he seems almost like a brother. I think I should like to marry someone of Mr. Knight's age. Like him. Someone I could respect. Mr. Knight doesn't love me, does he? Oh, if I had not committed myself. But I mustn't think of that now. Perhaps I might have fallen for Mr. Knight.
Here we are at last. Perhaps the coachman would carry our provisions down to the shore if we go and find a place to picnic.
You go on, my dear. I'll arrange it.
All right.
Elfriede, take Henry down to the sea while the weather remains fine. We've no means of telling how long it will last.
We'll go collecting pebbles. This beach has the occasional precious stone on it, I believe, Mr. Knight.
Oh, I shall look forward to finding one. But I can hardly take my eyes off the blue of the sea. How beautiful it is here.
Yes, it's one of my favorite places.
May I take this chance, Miss Swancourt, to give you these? I didn't forget your wish.
Oh, you shouldn't have. I didn't know you really meant to buy me earrings. Please, it's very kind of you, but I can't take them.
You won't accept them?
I'd rather not. They are beautiful. More beautiful than any I have ever seen. But I'd rather not have them, if you will forgive me. Take them back and don't let me see them any longer. Do, please.
But why, Elfie?
Because I shall want them. And I'm not Elfie to you, Mr. Knight. Anyway, I have a reason for not taking them now.
You'll take them someday, perhaps?
I don't think so.
Why not? It is not fair for you not to tell me your reason.
I don't like to.
Oh, then your dislike of having them must be because of myself.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Do you like me, Elfrid?
I like you, yes.
But not very much.
You get impatient with me and say hard things. How can I?
You think of me as some sort of mentor, I suppose.
No, I don't. I mean, I do... Oh, I don't know what to think. Let's join the others now.
Well, will you take my arm, Miss Swanport?
In the evening, on my dressing table, a small parcel. My fingers shake as I unwrap layers and layers of white tissue. Inside, the blue case, the earrings, Harry's beautiful earrings. I hold them up to my neck, my face. I can't resist a look in the mirror just for one moment. My mirror reflects them. They shine back at me, exquisite. I quickly put them away. It is my absolute duty to refuse them. I think it is. Later in bed, I can hardly sleep. In the morning, a letter from Stephen.
Dearest Elfrid, I have sent a sum of £200 to be added to your account in St. Launce's. I have saved this in 1 year, and what's so proper as well as pleasant for me to do is to hand it over to you to keep for your use. I think your father will now feel that my asking to be engaged to you is anything but the dream of a silly boy not worth rational consideration. I also mention, with some excitement as you can imagine, that I am to be sent home on business, and when it is completed I shall get 3 months' leave. I'll write to the shipping agents, asking them to telegraph you when my ship will be in sight, because I know what this information will mean to you, my own Elfrid. There is no need to say how much I long for our reunion, and for the moment when I shall again approach your father, this time with every hope of success. Your ever-loving Stephen.
Elfrid, have I done something to upset you? These last few days you have hardly spoken to me. Have I been here too long and overstayed my welcome?
Oh, no, no, that is not so. It's just...
Yes?
That I have been thinking deeply, and it has made me seem a little remote.
Well, I won't stay another day if my presence is distasteful to you. In the first weeks we were together, you implied that I was too severe in my demands on you. But now that I treat you more gently, you, it seems, are being unfair to me.
Oh, no, no, don't say that.
Then I'll stay a little longer, shall I?
Oh, yes, do. But don't be vexed if I keep to myself. Perhaps something may happen so that everything will be easier for me to tell you.
To tell me what?
Come in.
You please, ma'am. Telegram for you.
Oh, thank you, Unity. Please excuse me, Mr. Knight.
Of course.
Amaryllis telegraphed off Holyhead 4 o'clock. Expected to dock and land passengers at Canning's Basin 10 a.m. tomorrow. So, you are on your way back to claim me, Stephen.
Oh, Mr. Knight, I never expected to meet you here. Have you been watching me?
I was on the cliff path above. I looked down and saw you. Whatever you're doing here, quite alone and on such a desolate part of the cliff.
I find it enjoyable. I'm tracking the stream down. Soon it disappears over a waterfall I like to sit and watch.
Oh, why did you bring such a heavy telescope with you? I saw you struggling beneath its weight.
I thought I should like to look out over the sea.
Give it to me. I'll carry it for you.
Thank you.
The ground's becoming swampy. Perhaps we should go higher?
Oh, no, we're nearly there. This is where the stream plunges over and drops hundreds of feet.
So, good heavens. I should not like to follow this track on a dark night. Is there only this crumbling bank to prevent us going over with the water? My God, what a drop.
Yes. See how the water turns to spray, almost like mist.
Certainly our poor stream doesn't end in glory. Nearly a sad strip of debris collecting at the bottom of the cliff. What is it?
I was looking to see if I could see the Puffin, a little summer steamer that goes between Bristol and Castle Bottom. Perhaps you'd let me take the telescope again.
By all means, but rest it on my shoulder, or you won't be able to keep it steady.
Can't see anything. Could you look for me?
Of course. No. No, I don't see her.
Lucky.
Wait a minute, yes. There she is. Through the telescope, I can see her figurehead distinctly. It's the Puffin.
Oh, yes. I see her now. But can you see the deck?
Yes, quite clearly. And some of the passengers. I could even hazard a guess that one is looking back at us, probably through a ship's telescope. Well, there you are, then. Is that what you came to see?
Oh, not particularly. But I'm glad you've seen it. Ships interest me with their comings and goings.
Well, don't you think we ought to go back? It's raining on the Puffin. It'll soon reach us. Why, often we've gone quite pale. Is anything wrong?
No, it's only something in the air that seems to affect me.
One would have thought this air would make your fair skin rosy. You must be nature's spoiled child.
I think, as you said, we should return.
Oh, that is to our left. I've never seen one that rises sheer from the cove to its extremity in such a fashion.
I cannot even bear to look at it. Its blackness frightens me. It has a horrid personality that makes me shudder. Please come away.
Don't tell me you're nervous, Elfie. If you can climb, you can go up that path over the grim old fellow's brow.
If you choose. I've climbed many steeper slopes than that.
Oh. If you take my arm, I could help you.
It's all right. I can manage quite well by myself.
Well, my hand, then.
If you'd like me to.
Well, I think this is the top. Oh, good heavens. Whatever height must we be?
Oh, 600 feet, the local people say. Look how the waterfall appears no more than a handspan now.
We get an even better view of the Puffin. She's making good headway. Shall we sit? You know that over that cliff edge where nothing but emptiness seems, there's a moving, compact mass. The wind strikes the face of the rocks, it runs up, it curves high over us in an arch and disperses behind us. See, I'll throw this scarf of sail and you can watch it.
Oh, yes! How did you know it would do as you said?
Oh, it's generally known. I dare say over the brow there, there's a little backward current. Now, go and see.
Oh, please don't go too near the edge. Oh, your hat!
That's the backward eddy I told you about. Don't worry, I'll get it.
Be careful.
Oh.
Mr. Knight! Henry, what is it? Are you all right?
I'm fine. Some difficulty in getting back. The slope is a bit steeper than I'd imagined.
But you can get back.
No. No, I can't do it.
Wait! I'll help. Take my hand.
What?
Oh,
Elsie, why did you... I'm afraid you're in danger now.
I dropped the telescope.
Hold tight to me now. Don't panic. As long as we stay above this ledge, we're perfectly safe. Let me think for a moment what to do.
Think of something gritty.
Now, look. What you must do is this. Climb up my body until your feet are on my shoulders. Do you understand? Then I think you'll be able to climb up to the level.
Well, what will you do?
I'll wait while you run for help.
We should have done that in the first place, shouldn't I?
Well, now, don't let's talk about it. And be brave, Elsa, and do as I told you. Right, now.
This is the moment that came to me on the tower. I knew it would come.
But this is no time for superstition. Put your foot in my hand. Now, the other. Hold on. Hold to my shoulder. Can you climb up now?
I don't think so. Try.
What can you see?
The sloping hill.
Nothing more?
Heather and grass.
Nobody walking?
No, no one.
Well, now, you see that tuft of sea pink above you?
Yes.
Well, grasp it, but don't trust it inside. And then step on my shoulder, and you should be up.
What?
Oh,
I'm... Oh, my God! Harry! The cord, my foot has broken away.
Well, how long can you hold on? I'll go for help.
How long will it take you to run to Endelstone back?
3/4 of an hour?
That's no good. My hand won't hold out in a minute. Can't you see anyone?
No. Wait. I've thought of something.
What? A dream! A dream!
She has gone. I am alone now, and almost certainly about to die. Opposite me is an embedded fossil. The dead eyes turned to stone are even now looking at me. I and this fossil, though separated by millions of years in our lives, will meet in death. Did once have a body to save, as I have now. I shall be with the small in death. Shall I die? And if so, what will Elfried do without me? I will cling on. I will. It rains upwards instead of down. The raindrops stick into my flesh like icy needles. Each drop is a shaft, pierces my skin. No ordinary rain has ever tortured me so. The wind lifts my coat, tugs at me. Seems as though some cosmic force is actively bent on my destruction, lashing at me, eager for conquest. My hands are getting weaker. I don't think I should ever see Elfried again. She must have gone 10 minutes. As many more will be my end. I look down. I see the surface of the sea past my feet. Black as black with a narrow border of white foam. My funeral etching. My world is upside down. Beneath my feet is air and the unknown. Above me, the familiar earth. All that I love. Have I faith in Elfried? Perhaps love is faith, and faith, like gathered flowers, lives on, rootless. Who would have expected it? A blotch of vermilion on the leaden ground. A red face with a drunken leer. Life. I give up hope. My hands will hold only a few moments more. Death. Stretching out his hand to me.
Harry! Harry! How much longer can you wait?
Elfried! So you have not left me. Oh, how beautiful your face, glistening with tears and rain.
How long can you hold on for?
4 minutes.
But if you have a good chance of being saved?
7 or 8.
I've torn these linen strips and knotted them together. Can you wait while I bind?
Yes, if you are quick. Test each knot for its strength, Elfried.
But one is broken.
Well, redo it. Get it done. And go back over the bank as far from the edge of the slope as the rope will allow you. When you're there, lean down and hold the end with both hands.
I've tied it round my waist. Now lean on the bank, holding with my hands as well. Take care. Oh, please, take care.
It's
Harry, is it truly you?
Oh, my little Elfrid. You saved my life.
Oh.
My Elfrid.
I was so frightened for you, Harry. More frightened than for myself.
Elfrid, you used your clothes. Your petticoats.
What else was I to use? Oh, the poor puffin that we came to see is quite out of sight. But I think I must go on ahead now. Wait a little before you follow me.
That thin dress is no protection. Take my coat or the chill will kill you.
I don't need your coat. I shall get warm running.
God bless you for what you've done for me. I should have kissed you, Elfrid. Made you mine for always. But perhaps it's as well that I didn't. It would have been taking advantage of you at your least guarded. How that wet dress molds your soft form. Oh, Elfrid, forgive me.
Stephen will be waiting now in the church. He may come to the house if he doesn't find me there. I've written back his £200. He'll find it at his parents' cottage. Oh, Stephen, forgive me. It's not that I love you less, but that I love another more. I am faithless and untrustworthy. But when I promised myself to you, how could I know that I would change so much?
A breeze is rising again. Oh, how the ash tree rustles. Do you hear it, Harry?
What time has it been?
Oh, I'm afraid we shall get another scolding for being late.
Well, we'd better hurry.
It's 7:30. No wonder it's so dark. I think they'll be waiting dinner for us.
Elfrid.
Did you hear anything?
Not just then, but I thought I did earlier.
Come, let's go in.
Oh,
who's there? Who are you? I can't see you there in the darkness.
Never mind who I am. What I am, may she be. Perhaps I knew well. So well a youth whose place you took as he there now takes yours. Would you let her break your heart and bring you to an early grave as she did the one before you?
What are you doing here eavesdropping? Why do you talk so wildly? You must be Mrs. Jethway.
I'm desolate and nobody cares about me. May she be the same that brought trouble on me.
You've no right to talk like that. She would never harm anyone intentionally.
Can I help hating her if I think of the past? Can I help it if I remember my boy? Is it natural to wish her ill? Oh, my son, my poor son, my son.
You may be forlorn, but I suffer as much as you. Elfrid, with Henry Knight, my best friend, the man I have most loved and admired, I can scarcely believe it. Never once has she mentioned him to me in her letters. But her feeling for him is plain enough, or too plain. She adores him as she never did me. Oh, Elfrid, so faithless, and all without telling me. Someone has died.
Should we stop and look at the Luxillian vault, Elfie?
Who do you think we ought?
Well, I don't think anyone would mind. I was rather hoping for a glimpse of the interior before they close it. From your father's description, this is considerable interest.
The vault is still open. I can see it from where I am.
Where? Oh, yes, you're right. Who would that man be beside it, do you know?
It might be the Mason.
The Mason? Well, then perhaps it's John Smith, the father of the friend I mentioned to you. Let's leave our horses here and go and see.
Well, mightn't we find that Lord Luxillian is there and would consider us intruders? I'd really rather not stop, Harry. It doesn't seem right.
As you like. But I'm going to ask that person if he is John Smith. Shall I help you dismount, Elfie?
If you insist.
If you wait, I'll just go and speak to him.
Harry!
What is it?
Nothing.
Only that I may as well come with you.
You're very strange, Elfrid. What's come over you so suddenly?
Please, Harry, don't question me so.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir?
May I ask if you are by any chance the father of a friend of mine called Smith?
What?
Stephen Smith.
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, how is he?
Oh, well enough, thank you, sir. He's back in England.
Yes.
Sure. He'll be down there where poor Lady Luxillian have just been laid.
But
in the port, looking at the carving.
Well, that's extraordinary. Did he know I was here?
Oh, I couldn't say, sir.
But come, Elfrid, I'll introduce you to him.
I would prefer to stay outside. I could go back and watch the horses.
Stay out, by all means, if you're frightened by death.
No, Harry. I'll come if you wish.
Stephen? Stephen? Stephen!
How are you?
Why have you never written to me, Stephen?
I could ask the same of you.
Yes, why haven't we? But I know you've been successful. You must teach me the way to get on in the world.
I'm afraid I haven't got the time, much as I should like to. I'm going away tomorrow and have not a moment to myself before I return to India.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But of course I understand if you're busy. If this is to be our only meeting, let me say I wish you well with all of my heart. What a strange place this is for us to meet in.
A solemn place, without a doubt.
What sketches are those you're making?
A few details in the church, and copying the names from some of the coffins.
That's poor Lady Luxillian's, I suppose. And the remainder of the family are on this side. Why are those two so snug and close together?
That's Lady Elfrid Kingsmore, born Luxillian, and that is her husband. I've heard my father say the two of them ran away and... and married against the wish of her parents.
Oh, then I imagine this to be where you got your first name, Elfie.
She was my grandmother.
Oh, Stephen, this lady is Miss Swancourt. I'm staying at her father's house, as you may know. I may as well tell you that we are engaged to be married.
I congratulate you. I know Miss Swancourt a little. You must remember that my father is a parishioner of Mr. Swancourt.
Oh, of course.
I have seen Mr. Smith before.
Well, there's no excuse for me, then. As strangers, I should have introduced you. As acquaintances, I have stood between you. But the fact is, Stephen, I still think of you as quite a boy.
You should have said I'm the rural builder's son and therefore unfit to introduce.
Oh, you're joking. Oh, no, I won't have that. You've changed a lot, Stephen. I've not forgotten the attachment you told me about as one of the main reasons for your going to India. I hope everything's all right in that connection.
No. My hoped-for engagement is broken off.
Oh, I trust it was for the best.
I would like to think so. But I'd rather not talk about it.
I'm sorry. Elfrid, is anything wrong? You come very pale.
Nothing. Just the air in here. I shall be myself in a moment.
Are you sure you're all right, dearest? Elfrid. Elfrid.
My deceit, my untruthfulness is terrible. I don't dare to tell Harry about Stevens and my journey to London. Shall I ever bring myself to? If Harry could understand that my silence is to try to gain his love and respect for a few more days, and that is the only reason. My eyes meet Stephen's. I look directly at the man who has called me his wife, the man I have called my husband. The intensity, the agony of Stephen's look pierces me like a knife. I look away. Press my hand over my eyes to blot out Stephen's image. My deed of deception is complete.
The That was Episode 2 of A Pair of Blue Eyes by Thomas Hardy, dramatized for radio by Jane Beeson. Henry Knight was played by Jeremy Irons, Elfried by Janet Moore, and Stephen Michael Maloney. Parson Swancourt was played by Nigel Stock, Mrs. Swancourt, Vivian Pickles, Mrs. Jethway, Anna Wing, Lord Luxillian, Christopher Scott, Unity, Sheila Grant, and John Smith, Alan Dudley. The director was Cherry Cookson.